My name is Simon Perry. Today is the 19th of June, 2024, and this is an oral history project called Pax People. And we are in the Crown in Ryde on the Isle of Wight. And we're with
Christine Fisher-Lathwell.
Now, Christine, thanks very much for offering to do this today. Can you tell me your year and place of birth?
June the 21st, 1949, and I was born in Petworth in Sussex.
Okay. Sussex. And what were your mum and dad's names?
They were Aubrey Roy Street and Kathleen Laura Street.
And which, do you know which years they were born?
My father was born in 1922, but my mother was older than him. She was born in 1911.
Okay. And what did they do?
My mother was a chemist's assistant and my father was a radio and television engineer.
And what was life like? How long did you live in Petworth?
Not very long. We moved to the Isle of Wight maybe a year after I was born.
So no memories of Petworth?
No memories, but I do have holiday memories of Petworth, big ones, but no. And the family moved to the Isle of Wight, I presume, in about 1951.
And which part did you move to?
We moved to Cowes, in Mill Hill Road in Cowes. I lived there with my brother Frank and my sister Margaret and Dad and Mum, of course. Frank was 12, I think, when we moved there. But as he grew up, he was a brilliant artist and had the opportunity to move and live in America with our auntie and uncle to go to art school. He became a commercial artist. You're right.
What made them move to the Isle of Wight?
My dad came from the Isle of Wight.
Okay.
And they bought a house in Cowes.
Right.
As I remember.
And so your brother was 11 years older?
Yes.
And so what point did he move to America then?
That's
quite
a
big move, isn't it?
When he was 16.
Okay. Your dad said, hey, I guess equivalent of, this is years later, I guess he learned. He just thought, well, I want to move back to the island.
We moved back a year after I was born, and because Dad had seen a house on the island and he wanted to be near his parents who lived in Ryde, but not too near.
So, within touching distance, yeah, but not in the pocket.
And at that point, I presume my mother agreed, although she loved Petworth, and we came over here and stayed in Cowes for about 5 years, and then we moved to Ryde.
So you went to school in Ryde?
I did, yes. We lived in Hyde Park Road, and my school was Bishop Lovett, and my sister was Sandown Grammar.
And how was growing up and going to school in Ryde?
I loved it, absolutely loved it. So close to the beach, felt that our house, my friends envied our house because it was a kind of looked like a Tudor house. That's the only way I can explain it, in Hyde Park Road. And they thought we were really posh, but we weren't. So Dad sold our house in Cowes and we moved to Ryde.
And school was enjoyable as well as the time?
Yes, yeah. Yes, Bishop Lovett was great fun.
And then what was it? You left school and then went to,
yes,
PAX?
I sat my 11 plus and I passed the year after my sister. But the school, apparently there were only so many places for children to go to Sandown Grammar. And Mum thought that I'd probably be better off staying at Bishop Lovett. So I stayed at Bishop Lovett. But there I discovered that I really enjoyed painting, or not painting exactly, but drawing things. So, and there was some inherent thing, I think, from my brother, who was absolutely brilliant, And that's why I stayed at Bishop Lovett until I left. I was offered GCSEs but didn't want to take them. Free spirit.
Uh-huh.
And Mum said, we're going to have to get a job. And she found me a job at Pack and Culliford's.
Right, which is pretty close to where we're actually sitting right now. I mean, we can see old building.
We can, absolutely.
So she came home one day and said, hey, guess what? You're going for an interview or...
Yeah, she's seen an interview in the an advert in the county press for a person to work in the baby department in PACS with an artistic flair. And Mum thought, well, Chris has got an artistic flair. She can go for this job, and I did. And thankfully, I got it. I now realise that possibly the only reason I got it was that the window dresser had fled to London, Stephanie, and there wasn't anyone to dress the windows.
And so each department had their own window dresser?
No, it was more that the one window dresser dressed all the windows, but Stephanie wanted more experience, I'm assuming. So there were, I think it was 7 or 8 windows to dress. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Maybe 9 windows to dress. And I started dressing the baby linen window. Miss Guy came to see me, took me to the window, let me step in, and she said, I want you to take all this down. And then the things were hung on nylon threads, and then she handed me a hammer, nylon thread and some pins, and I was never without them for many, many years to come. And I didn't know what display was. I had no inkling. I thought it was a peacock spreading its feathers. It didn't occur to me what display was, and it was something I had to learn. But Miss Guy was really, really, really kind. She used to come down, even though I heard her quite stern, you know, with the people that worked there. You know, she wouldn't have anything go wrong, and things had to be absolutely perfect. She was very kind, and she showed me how to hang things from nylon thread.
I was going to say, was Miss Guy, she was the owner, was she?
She was the owner's daughter.
Right.
Old Mrs. Guy, or the dragon.
That was the daughter or the mother?
That was the mother.
Right.
But she really was a fabulous lady, but none of us appreciated that, because whenever she came down from her office, it was like the Queen was arriving, and we really had to be on our best behaviour, because it was like an army inspection. So she just wanted everything to be perfect for PACS, and I think she was quite right now that I think about it. But and Miss Guy, who eventually was married and became Mrs. Barrow, she was a lot kinder and less frightening. She also wanted the windows to be perfect, though, so it took at least a year or so for me to understand what was required, because each thing that was being displayed was displayed in a totally different way. And I guess they maybe saw some kind of understanding in me, and Mr. Guy suggested that Miss Guy's brother suggested that I went to Portsmouth Art College, where I took a course in display. And every Thursday evening I would go to Portsmouth and pile up baked bean tin cans till they didn't fall over. But I think I may have said that I found the rudiments of display by learning what shape was required to make a window interesting. And the shape was basically a triangle and back to front, kind of from the top back, moving everything towards the front. Okay. And it really is quite a very good way of displaying things, although these days there aren't many windows to dress anyway. But so I got my display certificate. Went on to do an art A level, and was happily working away when they decided to get a display manager, because they needed somebody to drive me and him to all the different branches, because the girls in all the PAX branches were having to do the windows themselves. So they a chap called Mr. Pittman arrived from Devon, and Brian Pittman, his name was. He would drop me off at different branches, leave me there, and then come and pick me up, while he would come back and do the PAX windows that were in really the most important, because they had the most windows and probably the most business.
Goodness gracious, there's so much for us to go through
there
from
is,
there.
Yes,
wow, that's an amazing starting point.
I know, but that's where it started. So,
yeah.
Is there anything you want to ask me?
Goodness, there's so much I want to ask you. There's so much there. Where do we start? So, with the. I think this idea of you leaving school and then basically saying, there's the window, get on with it then.
Mm.
It just, at what age were you then?
I was 16.
I mean, it's just, I guess one, when you're 16, you're kind of fearless.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
So, well, okay, yeah, well, I'll give it a go. Was that your approach?
Well, yes, I remember being terrified of having to climb up a ladder because they were really wobbly. But the only way that you could get the effect that you wanted, as I learnt over the months, I needed to get an effect by going outside and looking at what I was putting in the window and realising it was either top heavy or there was nothing at the back, nothing at the top, and putting that into practice about the A shape or triangular shape for display was quite hard, because when you'd, for instance, I learnt that you should start at the very top, so whatever you had at the top either had to be standing on something or hung, because, and more towards the back. So all those things came into play as I began to dress each window, would use different things. For instance, the millinery department, I'd have to go up and choose coordinating hats to go in the millinery department, which is French Frank's Island window.
That's a 360 yeah, degree window,
yeah,
isn't
so
it?
Yeah, so you entered from the back and people would come and go through into packs that way, usually knocking on the window. So that window had to be dressed from the point of view of them coming out as well as going in.
Right. That's a whole. I mean, I guess when it's a normal window, you can hide the bits and bits.
You can,
that the public can't see.
A lot of things were hidden at the back of the window. So we, myself, and as Mr. Pittman began working there, he encouraged us to start making different things for the window, different props, and he bought things like square columns, all of different heights, that would mean you could display shoes and hats and all sorts of things on these columns in front of the clothing. So there were all things that he brought into PAX when he was there. I would love to get hold of him and say, would you like to come and talk again? he decided to leave PAX, and about 2 months later I got a letter from him, to my mum, asking if I wanted to go. up to London and work with him, which I did.
Right.
But coming back to PAX was... everything was made in the basement. All the
this is the original time?
Yes.
The first
back
time?
To the original time. Yeah. So this is my first stint at working with PAX. And...
when you said made in the basement, they gave you a space and said,
yes,
here, here's
had
a workshop,
the cellar,
effectively.
All you could walk through, so we had an area to stack our props and an area with sort of workbenches where we would jigsaw out cardboard to make certain shapes, you know. So I learned how to make things as well, and to make miniature things like tiny elves for the grottos. And then our next display manager, Sue Arthur, I believe it was. No, Colin Creasy, sorry. He was a different kind of window dresser. A little bit more straight-laced, not really given to adventure with the windows, so... I sometimes used to get into trouble because I love to do really unusual windows. And so I would do things like when there was a massive gale in the churchyard, a tree fell down. So I asked Mrs. Barrow if I could put the tree in the window, which I did. And we displayed leather and furs with this tree. It was a massive, great branch. And the window was called Take a Walk on the Wild Side. So, and I didn't always hit it off with Mr. Creasy because he was much more conventional in his display. But he was a really nice man. He was very, very nice. But I'm not sure what happened when I left. So, but at that time, I still hadn't left. So we had our daily routine where we would go. It would be maybe Mondays would be Shanklin branch.
All right. How many branches at that time were you looking after the windows of then?
All of the branches except for Morgan's in Cowes. I think Mr. Guy ran that.
So where were the branches? Do you remember?
So there was Totland, Yarmouth, Shanklin, Cowes, Miss Pack.
That was in Ryde,
yes.
Union Street?
Yes, it was just up where the estate agent is there. It's a turning to go round to Newport. I don't remember. There wasn't one in Ventnor. Seaview, Miss Pack, Ryde. But at that time, Elizabeth Pack was Woods and Wilkins.
The one that is being converted?
That's right, okay. Yes. We used to get our display things from there. So I remember Woods and Wilkins, everyone in sort of caramel brown work coats or doctor's coats.
That's great, isn't it?
Lovely, Woods and Wilkins. It was one of those places that smelt of all sorts of things like wood and leather and, you know, really many, many things, very much like the back of Hurst's in Ryde. In Newport, very much like that, with everything you could wish for.
Yeah. I mean, it is a phenomenon, Hurst, isn't it? It really is, just the amount of stuff you can get in there.
Mm.
So when you were talking about the nine windows that you were looking after, that was including all of the branches, or was that nine windows in Ryde?
There were nine windows in Ryde, and I forgot to count how many branches we
there
counted.
Was quite a few, wasn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, so let's see. Ryde, Totland, Cowes, Seaview,
Freshwater?
Yarmouth.
Okay.
Don't think there was one in Freshwater,
okay.
But not as far as I know.
And each of those had one window
Morgan's.
Each?
No, Shanklin had four windows. They had to be done in a day. Yes,
okay.
Yes. So we've got nine branches, I think, at the moment.
Goodness. I mean, it is a full-time job, but I mean,
yes,
it's not...
and it was department stores. I mean, Shanklin were department stores, Seaview was a department store, and Morgan's, as far as I know, was a department store. I didn't do Yarmouth. I think Mr. Pittman did Yarmouth.
Okay. So when you... I just this idea of you at 16 turning up and then saying, well, there's your nylon thread, there's a hammer. Get on with it.
Yeah.
Having never... I mean, you've seen windows.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you'd seen it in terms of sort of mentally disassembling were doing.
No, I mean, my life was just basically the Isle of Wight. I hadn't been anywhere else. And yes, I used packs to get my school uniform, but the idea of dressing a window, I didn't really understand what display was. It's something that, because I'd not been in the retail business.
I mean, that you mentioned about going to packs for your school uniform.
Mm.
Can you describe the process of what it was like going into packs for your school uniform?
Well, it was lots of fun. It was lovely, and it all smelt really nice because my things, old things, had got really crummy and awful. And so it was really exciting when Maggie and I used to go with Mum in, because they sold school uniforms.
So what was the experience of getting the school uniform like?
Well, there were school uniforms from most of the schools. I don't know if it was Ryde. I'm pretty certain my sister, who went to Sandown Grammar, I'm sure she got hers there. And she and I had so much fun trying on. All the things were kept, for instance, PE kits, blouses, skirts, except the skirts and dresses, some of the dresses were on rails, but all the rest of the things were in pull-out drawers where you could see through the glass case to get your things. And it was so much fun to show each other our clothes and what they looked like. But the worst thing was when somebody from the convent came in at the same time as you, because for some reason the convent girls seemed to look down on the girls that went to Bishop Lovett. And I don't know if the Sandown Grammar was included, but I remember feeling slightly embarrassed because I had the green summer dress of Bishop Lovett. However, but the experience was that a very nice lady who I remember called Mrs. Brown would come and measure you round the bust and round the hips and across the back to make sure everything was right, the blazer was right. And it just felt really important, getting that new school uniform. And I remember many years later, we're trying to get a uniform for my children, that I would have loved them to have the experience of getting the school uniform from PAX. Because, I mean, they'd done it for years and years. They knew what to do.
So you felt special,
yes,
knowing that you were going to get...
absolutely special,
right.
Yes.
And how did the people treat you at sort of... Well, yeah.
When I was the child or going
as
in
a
when
child,
I first
yeah,
went?
When you went for the uniform.
As just the same way as they would treat a female customer who was going to buy... You know, we weren't called madam, but it was that feeling that we were special because we were being measured and... did everything fit right? And if the summer dress was too long, there was the offer for it to be taken up or altered, because upstairs they had a wonderful sewing room, which I came to see when I worked as display. And so it wasn't kind of off the production line. You were treated... I can even remember... my last summer dress having darts put in it because I had a bust at last. It's really weird, but it was the fact that it would be shaped to me, and which I thought was wonderful. It's one of the services that I never really thought about until now. So
it's interesting, that idea of, I'm sure the very wealthy have this, of clothes customised for them.
Mm.
But at that, just being for a school uniform.
I was just a normal, ordinary person from High Park Road. I wasn't anybody special, but to have my... Yes, I mean, my mum could sew, and she probably would have done that for me, but it was so nice to think that somebody actually cared that we had changed or evolved. They even kept records of our measurements
Wow.
So that if anybody new came in, they would possibly know, because there were always different juniors learning in the children's department and around the side, because the ground floor had a middle, and you came round to one department or in a door to go to another department the other side of the round. So
what do you mean round?
Well, the counters, they weren't right. Round, but they were displayed in such a way that the children's department came along here with one to slightly to the left, and then there was a gap, and then you'd go on around this middle portion that had displays on it and more drawers with things in, and then you came to the hats and gloves department. Sorry, not the hats department, the gloves and accessories department. So there were two departments downstairs.
Okay.
And so it made a lot more room for them to keep everything. And then, of course, there were the display cabinets that you could put your hands on, that you could look through to see the things in the drawers, like vests and pants and all sorts of things. Mm. I'm pretty certain they did Full Ride School as well.
Okay.
Got a feeling.
So did you shop there any other time?
Yes, I would go upstairs with my mum and my sister for mum to find a new coat or a new dress. And the service was impeccable, absolutely impeccable. There was Miss Keeling and Mrs. Drawbridge in the coat department. And then there was June Langdon and Mrs. Barrow in the dresses department, which led through, I think, to the bridal department, as far as I remember. So I can't remember the names of any of the other people that worked there, but I think they often had junior girls working there.
So you learnt their names afterwards? You wouldn't know them as a customer?
No, we didn't know them as a customer. We just knew that Mum was always greeted with, "Good morning, madam, how can we help you today?" And they were wonderful ladies. One of the ladies that worked there, Mrs. Drawbridge, has a daughter who's written a book called Isle of Wight Memories, our childhood memories, and it's down in the Victoria Arcade where there's a museum about rides. So she has the book down there, and she spoke about Mrs. Drawbridge, her mother, in it. And I bought the book because I desperately wanted a... bring it with me when we came to meet to show you Mrs. Drawbridge's names. And Pack and Culliford's was mentioned when the theatre, which was the West Bank, burned down, and the Drawbridges came through to see what was happening. It said it was lucky it didn't touch Pack and Culliford's. So that was just a mention in the book that I thought would be relevant, and then I forgot to bring it.
Right.
Yes, that was...
I mean, that just that whole shopping experience sounds... Did it felt special? Were all the other shops like that you went into? Or
yes,
that?
Everybody was well-trained in order to give you that kind of service.
Every shop in the high street felt like that, or that felt different?
No, I thought you meant Pack and Culliford's. I was going to say Pack and Culliford's probably... well, there were some shops where you were treated in the same manner, but it was... perhaps becoming a little bit old-fashioned, and I'm so glad that Pax retained that, because it made people feel special. I mean, the amount of people that have said, "I got my wedding dress in Pax," you know, is because there were other wedding dress shops, but there was this service that Pax gave that made us all feel really, really special. But the other shops, the dress shops... Funnily enough, there was one down Union Street, Marder's Dress Shops, and in our house in Hyde Park Road, we lived the other end of this big Tudor house, and the people that owned Marder's lived in the other end. And they were lovely people, very, very kind and nice. Their service was good, but nowhere near as, you know, measuring people, taking everything in, making sure that people had... everything that they wanted, you know. It wasn't quite the same. It was more of a off-the-peg service. I don't know if that's what you call it.
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was... Yes, so they had factories making their clothes, whereas a lot of... I'm not saying... I mean, Mrs. Barry used to... Miss Guy used to go to London to buy from all the fashion houses, so that's why there was such a choice of things. You know, she'd buy anything from Mary Quant to Chanel. She had a very varied taste in clothes. And so people knew, the people that respected and loved fashion knew that they could come to PAX. And that's probably why they opened Miss PAX, that I forgot to count, because they knew that in the 60s there was this massive trend towards Mary Quant clothes and that style of thing, you know, Carnaby style.
And that didn't fit in within the
way that teenage department.
PAX and Culliford was.
No, that's right, because right. It was the departments were from the top, sewing room, millinery, coats and dresses, evening wear and bridal, and then coming downstairs it was the children's department and the haberdashery department. So that
was on the ground floor, was it?
Yes, that was on the ground floor. And that was...
So Miss PAX, or Miss PAC, felt like, well, this is totally different to the type
absolutely.
Of clothes we sell there.
We were so excited when it opened. We had the most fabulous models that Miss Guy bought from a firm that became very famous with all the London, Adele Rootstein models. And instead of being just stagnant, they were posed. And we had a famous, I can't think of her name now, big fuzzy-haired model from the 60s, and she was posed like this. And we had to put her together, and it... They just posed in different ways. We had Twiggy. They were...
Oh, they actually had mannequins of
mannequins
famous...
of different people, yes.
Right.
Twiggy was very, very popular because she was tiny. And then, I can't think of this. She was a very, very famous, something like Verushka, famous black model with big hair. And it was the fact that you could pose these Adele Rootstein models in lots of different poses...
Because of the way their arms jointed,
yes, and they just were standing in totally different poses, and they could put their arms up in the air, and because that's the way they'd developed their arms had been so that you could make them look as if they were throwing their arms up in the air, so that was fabulous. Miss PAX was the ultimate teenage place to go on a Saturday. And Mrs. Barrow had that kind... Miss Guy had that kind of foresight.
And that... So that was while you were working there, Miss PAX opened, or was that...?
I'm trying to remember, because I came back from London...
Oh, right, this was maybe a subsequent one.
I think it was, yes.
Okay. Well, we can maybe
but
come on to that.
It must have been... Yes, we do need to find out when it was.
I'm sure someone's got a timeline of it.
Yes,
on
because...
the project.
I can't remember how long I was there at PAX before I went to London. Mm-hmm. I've got letters from me to my mum talking about... as I went to work for Mr. Pittman in London and talking about that, but I think that was 1964. So what I'm trying to establish is when Mrs. Barrow... No, I left school in 1964. So maybe it was 66, 68... Anyway,
okay.
I think I really need to find that out, because I'm Mr. Guy would probably, or Tim would probably know. Tim Guy would know.
Okay,
him
yeah.
If you get to speak to him,
I think that this idea of you for so many years going in and having a school uniform, having that wonderful experience, and then thinking. Then joining there to work.
Mm.
What was that feeling like?
Well, it was strange because I sort of knew the bottom floor and the top floor, but I didn't know there was anything else. It was exciting to, and I learnt to run up the stairs and run down. I was really fit because there were several areas of stairs. We had a display room upstairs and a display room downstairs, and the display room was on top of the sewing room. So the experience of going in there and actually being allowed to open a drawer, go behind the counter, or even pick things out. Mrs. Brown would say, "What do you want for the window?" And I would think, "I don't know. What do I do? Do I put boys' things in, baby things in?" So I said to her that I would like to dress a baby wear window, simply because I loved all the little dresses that they'd got on little hangers. And so she said to me, "Well, that would be my first window," which was quite a calamity. I was trying to get nylon thread hooked onto the ceiling and then bring it down, and the little dresses were on coat hangers, so I would hang one, then I'd have to hang more nylon thread to do two either side, and then I would hang nylon threads from other nylon threads, and sometimes that would collapse.
Okay.
It was a lot, and the ladders used to wobble, and I was just petrified the first time it started to sway towards the window, and it swayed back, and I was able to hold the wall.
Wow.
It was, and Mrs. Brown came down and said, "Are you all right? Are you all right?" But those were the feelings that stay with me. It's not, the experience was somewhat frightening, but it just gave me some, I would go to bed at night and dream when I knew that, and start thinking about how I would display the next window, how would they want it. And then Miss Guy would come into the windows, especially her dress window, and she would tell me how she'd like the models placed. And then she explained to me it's a good idea to arrange accessories down by the model's feet. So she really, really helped me when it came to display. And after about a year, I felt confident enough to go up, and if she wasn't in, I would choose clothes to go in the window. And then she would either come in and say, "No, I don't want that." So everything would go pear-shaped, and I'd have to undress all the models again. These were the recall of the experiences. I remember getting quite bold and going into the haberdashery. The window was the French Frank's window that was around, and getting more accessories to use in the window. And there was a lady called Mary there who's very nice but very sharp, and she said, "What are you doing in my drawers? Get out of my drawers." And it's just a passing joke, really, but you know, I was a bit afraid of her to begin with, but in the end I would just go and get what I wanted, because I would have to explain to her that the millinery window needed handbags and accessories, and they couldn't just be in the front. They had to go round. So when people, I think about after a year, people were much more comfortable with me choosing the things to go in the window. They would tell me what they wanted as the basis.
Okay.
And then I would go and pick out. And sometimes the things they chose clashed in either style or colour. They might have been too close a colour but not quite a match, so I would then find something that I thought either contrasted or, you know, and so my colour interpretation got better and better, and which is something I also learnt at the Portsmouth Art School, and I didn't realise that I had that in me. It's just that when Mum, many years later, when she looked at the cards my sister and I used to make, thankfully my sister was in America at the time, she said, "Chris, I knew you had talent because your cards were so much better than Margaret's." And Margaret's were very good, very neat and tidy, but mine, she said, had more imagination. I hope Maggie never listens to this. She comes over. Yeah, so she sort of knew that I had that colour ability, but probably didn't know how it would be best used. I think she was dreading the thought that if I went to grammar school, I probably wouldn't have been up to the work there. and that I would maybe try to go to university anyway. And she knew that that probably wouldn't be me, because I was very much a free spirit, I think. So that's probably why I went to London, I don't know. But I think that the guys were pleased with me, because, as I said, they did take me back again when I came home from London, and felt somehow my experience up there would probably benefit them, I would imagine. So Mr. Guy was great. He took me back 3 times, so that was very kind of him to do that.
So when they said to you, it sounded like the first window, they're sort of, well, what do you want to do with it? But then they sort of moved on to saying, well, there's a particular, like I said, if they had a new piece of clothing in or something, the manager for that area would say, okay, we want to focus on this
yes,
time.
Yes, because if they had a new line in of something that had to be displayed. And sometimes they would get artwork or posters and various things that belong to the new line of things. So those would have to be displayed. Yes, so if it was a new particular maker who wanted everything displayed, I'm trying to think of the name of it. It used to sell wool. It was children's clothes, Viella baby wear was made of wool and cotton. And so Viella would often send through advertising material. Lots of it was great fun, the advertising material. You know, you'd have to make it up because it's made of cardboard put together. But sometimes I knew, when I came back, I knew that they wanted that particular line, but they didn't have any advertising for it, so I'd make something. Of course, that wasn't in the days when you could print something from the internet, but we had an artist upstairs called Diane, and she hand did all the notices for packs, for the tickets and everything.
Wow.
Yes, amazing job she made. So I would get her to make me a big Viella printout on, and then do maybe a picture of children or little girls in dresses or whatever was appropriate from the Viella advertising. So she would do that.
And that would sit at the back of the display,
yes,
would it?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Wherever it looked most prominent. Sometimes if it was small, it would go in the front of the window. Sometimes it would be a big backboard, you know, and the clothes would kind of sit to the side of it slightly.
I mean, that's amazing for you to be able to have your own art department, effectively.
Yes, basically, Diane was our art department. She's a wonderful artist. So, yes, because if anything had to be made for the windows, I think that the previous display manager, Stephanie, probably made a lot of it, but Diane would always do the writing to go on it, the print.
And when you did you make bits and pieces for window or dye?
Yes,
what?
Yes.
So let's start this from, let's jump to when maybe you're a year in. We may come back to the earliest stuff again later, but you're a year in, so you've been to college, you understand, you've got the flow, you understand the A, the triangle, the depths. Somebody says to you, okay, here's the clothes. What is the process that you went through? Did it just instantly, you just had a vision for it, or how did it come together?
Well, before I went home at night, I would know which window I was doing in the morning. So often, just before I went home, I would go up and ask them what sort of colours they were putting in. Had they chosen the thing? Sometimes they hadn't. But if they had told me or showed me the garments, then I would start thinking up what relates to that. What is this? You know, is this rainwear? Do I, for instance, I remember making shards of nylon thread coming, it was at the back of the display, coming down and then marking each one black in black space, and that gave the impression of rain. So alligator rainwear would be on display. So to make something, if I knew in advance, I might I might have to go down to Rolf's art gallery down Union Street and buy things. I would buy sometimes different coloured like cardboard they sold, and I would either cut letters out or cut shapes out that I wanted. It would be, if it was raindrops, it would be raindrop shape. And then as the year progressed, I got a little bit more adventurous and I bought myself a jigsaw. My dad suggested this because I could see that you could make things out of hardboard. So my dad...
Less wobbly than cardboard.
Yes, yeah. And so I learnt to make things out of hardboard, so I would draw them out downstairs, cut them out, and then paint them or do whatever I had to do, put wooden struts at the back to make sure they stayed right. And so at that point, that's when I began making props. I in fact used that same idea many years later when I was working in Hills. So if the theme was Christmas, I remember sitting making endless elves and fairies out of bits of felt and fluorescent wings, and, you know, just having them hanging down. I sort of began to realise that you couldn't have the props in the front. They had to be at the back because the garments were most important.
Right.
And I would then, in my mind, I'd go home, lay there and think, what can I do to do this? You know, how can I display it?
So that's with you having a vision of what you wanted it to be?
Yes,
after but how can
dream,
I achieve it?
Yes, how can I achieve it?
Okay.
And then I'd think about the things that we had downstairs, because we often had a stock of different things. We had a material department and a jumpers department, I think. And I used to have things from the material department down there, ribbons and all sorts of things. So, yes. Yeah, that's how I did it. Gradually, I'm sure I was there probably for nearly 2 years, and it was gradual. It was a learning process. Sometimes things would be disastrous, you know. They just didn't look right in the window. Or I'd use the wrong colour paint because I wasn't allowed to take any clothes downstairs in case I got paint on them. So the trouble is, once you'd bought the paint from Woods and Wilkins, you couldn't take it back. All sorts of things you learn as you go along.
We learn a lot from our mistakes as well, don't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
So when you looked at... you'd finish a window... Well, you were mentioning before going sort of in and out and looking, what's it like from the outside?
Yes, absolutely. I'd look at the empty window first and look at where the models, who usually had a cover on them because we couldn't show them nude, and I'd look at how they were placed and I'd think about the stock I'd been shown, and then I would decide where the models needed to stand. Were there two here and maybe one there, maybe three here? You know, that's just to balance the windows. The window always needed to be balanced. You couldn't have it too heavy on one side. So if it was heavy on one side and there was nothing you could do about it, you had to find something to go on the back wall or something heavy in the front to go around the model to balance it. So there would be one, two and three. And that in equal terms wouldn't be equal. So whatever you did, and there had to be something at the back of the one model that took the display up a bit, like just a piece of card, coloured card, that reflected the clothes the model was wearing. So that would make her side of the window balanced in weight. They'd got lots of stock around there, the card at the back, and then you'd have two models there that didn't have any stock. So it was just... you learn what a natural balance is, because you have to keep going back out and going back in again to make it work.
And sometimes did you, even through that process of back and forth and balancing, you then finish it and just think, either you think, okay, I've got that right, and then you look at it the next day and go, oh, hang on a sec, that wasn't what I wanted it to be, or...
I could usually tell when I'd finished the window that it definitely wasn't right and I needed to do something. So I would then go back. And I often used to stay over time when I was working part-time and eventually, just to make sure I got the window finished. But when I was first there, I wasn't maybe able to do that quite so much. When I very first did the windows, Miss Guy would come downstairs and look in the window and she'd say, it's a bit heavy on that side, can you do something about it?
So right.
She kind of taught me to understand the balance. So if I went home and went past the window at 5:30 and the shop was closed, and I then looked at it as I was either walking down or up, I would sometimes see, and I think, well, you can see the pins at the back of the dress. Oh, God. You know, because I've walked up Union Street and looked
right.
in, this just doesn't look up right. The model's too far in the front. So then I'd go home and have a sleepless night till I could get back in and alter it. So, yes, you're right. But there were numerous times of going back out and back in and changing things around.
And you were saying when you were at Portsmouth, you sort of saying about learning how to stack baked bean cans. How comprehensive was the course? It was what sort of length?
A year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they taught you... Did they touch on the colour side of colour balancing? Or?
Yes, we had to do one lesson, I think, we had of mixing paint, but we didn't actually have to paint anything, just for us to see what happens when colours were mixed. I mean, I kind of knew, you know, that if you put certain colours together, like blue and yellow, you got green. But it was very interesting to be able... You had to do a colour chart that took you from dark all the way through to bringing it up to a lighter colour. So that was very, very helpful. I think they then progressed to giving us little bits of stock to put in a window and would then tell us whether or not the window was balanced. So we got that information from them in a way.
So you'd have full-size windows in the...
No, they were little booths about the size of...
Okay.
Maybe the size of this window.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were
so
up
3 foot,
here.
3 or 4 foot.
They were to your bust, really, you know, to that level, and you had sort of... No, they're a bit further down, and you had to make sure that everything was put in the window and not too far forward or too far back. So then the tutor would come round and decide if your window was working. If not, you had to take it all out and start again.
Mm-hmm.
So it was such good... I hadn't realised just how much Miss Guy... had taught me.
Right.
And I don't think she ever realised either.
Just, I guess these things, people absorb these things and it just becomes natural for them,
doesn't
it?
She knew what she was talking about. I mean, she'd been in the business, I presume, with her mother, Mrs. Guy, and maybe Mr. Guy, who may have been, they would have been retailers for many years, so probably I would think Elizabeth was in their shop with them. I think there was another person in it, in the retail company, Pack and Culliford's, and somebody else. Was it Jack's? Jack's?
Possibly.
Pack and Culliford's. And so I guess that's how she learnt. And what was nice was that she eventually took me up to London with her to buy props for the window, for autumn props, so that we didn't have to make them. And she was so lovely and friendly, so different to her mannerisms when she was in shock. She wasn't cold. She was very, very polite, and always very polite to us, to the staff as well. Unless you're in her office being told off.
Now, that is interesting, that she sort of had a persona at work.
Yes, she definitely did. Yeah.
And then when you were with her, she felt relaxed enough to switch that off.
Yeah. I know. Yes, she talked much more about the family and Gillian her sister, and she didn't really tell me much about them. Just basically, she would tell me something funny that happened when they'd had a barbecue. It was just she was much more natural. She didn't have to put on this persona, I presume.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. And how many times did you go up to London with her then? That was once you'd...
Twice, I think.
Right. Yeah. And that shows quite a lot of confidence in you.
Yeah.
That she felt that you were able to have an input on that.
Yeah. And at the time, we probably she would have taken the display managers that came in. It just happened that the two times that I went, we didn't then have a display manager. I don't think Sue Arthur was there then, so I still haven't been able to get hold of her, actually. I did feel that she was much more joking and laughing, you know.
And when you went back to work, was she then back in her persona?
Absolutely, yeah. Right. You couldn't be cheeky and say, "Hi, Liz." No, that wouldn't work, no. She had her persona. Just as her mother did. Her mother, just amazing woman. And you knew when her mother was coming downstairs because she would kind of bang as she came downstairs. You know, it was a funny little walk that she had. Oh dear, I do hope Tim doesn't hear me say this. It's just that his grandmother would have been more like a matriarch, like in Downton Abbey. That's who she reminded me of. The matriarch in Downton Abbey, but a really, really brilliant buyer, and Elizabeth inherited her ability to understand what the latest fashions were and bring them to the island
and see how they translate. Yeah, I guess not everything was going to translate here.
Yeah, because I don't know. I hadn't really understood. I knew Fowler's was a material shop next door, but I didn't really understand. It seemed to me that it took them quite a few years to even have a teenage department, whereas that's where I think Miss Pack must have been put up while I was here, because I know Fowler's didn't have a teenage department.
You're mentioning Woods and Wilkins, which is the building that's being converted now at Cross Street. Can you describe the experience of walking in there? What was that like? I mean, you were mentioning about people having the sort of the brown coats, work coats on, or...
Yeah, if I remember rightly, there was one very long counter with lots of drawers at the back. It may have changed, but the floorboard squeaked when you went in, so I think it was floorboards. And then there was an upstairs department. I think downstairs sold... I think the do-it-yourself department was upstairs, so Woods and Wilkins had all kinds of things. I remember going up the stairs, which creaked, to the next floor. I don't think the top floor was anywhere you could go, and that's where I got my nylon thread in the middle floor and hammers and things like that. I'm trying to think what they sold downstairs. And I've got the feeling it may have been things like there were lots of little drawers with nails and things in. So I'm not sure. It's my recall's not... There was definitely an area out the back. I think you could buy wood and planks and sort of things that carpenters would use, because I'm pretty certain we bought hardboard to make things out of there. Yes, I'm pretty certain we did, because it would wobble as the wind took you across the crossing from Woods and Wilkins to here, and the wind would take it going, Rolf Harris, right. You know, with the wobble board. Yes, I'm pretty certain they sold all sorts of things for carpenters. But it's I just remember the guys there seemed to be very old.
You were saying, you mentioned earlier the sort of the smell in the air of Woods and Wilkins.
Yes, it was like, well, wood and leather. I don't know what they sold that was leather, but it was polish, leather, wood, and I suppose there would have been
a slight smell of metal.
So they sold tools as well in there?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I just seem to remember having to go upstairs to get my nylon thread and hammers. Our haberdashery department sold pins, so I didn't need to get them from Woods and Wilkins. But, I mean, we got spray paints and silvers and golds for Christmas in there. Yeah, so they probably would have sold, don't know if they were invented then, car paints, I would imagine. They definitely seemed to move with the times, even though when you walked in, it was the era of a sort of Victorian shop. And the chaps there were quite elderly, or at least they seemed like that to a 16-year-old. But they were there for a long time, because they definitely were there when I came back. And it was lots of fun just looking around Woods and Wilkins. It seemed to me a very, very big store at the time, because, you know, we were used to department stores on the island, and Woods and Wilkins was like a department store, really, just the fact that you went upstairs. And even Elizabeth Pack's was a department store, because you went up the grand stairs to the Coffee Bean. Woods and Wilkins had a special memory when I was a child of going in there with my dad, who was a TV repairman, and wouldn't be allowed to do this now, but while we were in there, Maggie and I got sort of itchy feet and started walking around, and Dad said to us, you know, don't walk around, you know, you might get caught on something, or something might fall on you. So there was a very elderly man who worked in Woods and Wilkins. I think he must have gone out. He went and bought us some dolly mixtures and sat us down on some chairs, and we sat and ate the dolly mixtures.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it was such a lovely, lovely memory that it's never left me. But I don't remember taking in much about Woods and Wilkins there. I just remember Dad went there because he was trying to get planks for our garage. The car had gone in and gone through the floor. So Dad went in for that. I'm assuming that they were like Morey's in Newport, that they probably did sell lengths of wood, but
right.
I don't know where they would have kept them unless it was out the back where Terry Willie's office is.
With you were saying, let's touch on the bit of when you said maybe a couple of years, 2-3 years, that you were at Pack and Culliford's, and then you went to London. What was the process of? You mentioned one of the display managers.
Mr. Pittman. He had gone to a big store in London called John Sanders in Ealing. And they were looking for a display girl, and he and I got on really well. He was very nice. I got on with him and his wife, and he kind of treated me in a fatherly way, which was nice. And so he wrote a letter to my mum and said, would you like to Christine to come up to London, she would get some good experience here, and he said, I really enjoyed working with her, I think she would make a good display girl. So Mum agreed for me to go up there, and the owner of the store of Sanders, he found me a bedsit, and so I went up there and stayed at John Sanders for a while. But Mr. Pittman, I think I stayed there for a year. Mr. Pittman left because he'd got an even better job. I can't remember where it was. It might have been Debenhams, I think, down in Cornwall. And that was closer to his home because he came from Devon. So he and his wife Stella moved, and I thought, I don't really want to stay here. No, Mr. Pittman's not here. And so I applied for a job in Fifth Avenue in Regent Street, and I went to work Fifth Avenue, with a really... I didn't know what gay he was, but there was a very talented gay display manager there, a perfectionist, absolute perfectionist. And I could go out to Carnaby Street at the back of Fifth Avenue and have my lunch. I enjoyed working there, but I was a little bit afraid of the manager, as everything had to be absolutely perfect. But he seemed to have enough faith in me to get me to conduct a certain window that he wanted done. And that was fun doing that. But anyway, he sent me to one of their branches in Kensington, Fifth Avenue, where I had the experience of him buying 16 Twiggy models all in the same pose and putting them in an island window, and I had to dress them to make them look different, even though they were all exactly the same, with Twiggy's eyelashes and they all had the same pose like that. I had to do something with them and make them look different. So I got most of them sort of raising their hands, raising their arms, giving each other a cuddle. And then it was a bit far away from where I was working. Sorry, I applied for a job in Selfridges, but I didn't stay there very long because you had to be in work really early. I couldn't get in from Harpenden and Harts on time, so I was always in trouble for being late. But I didn't get the chance to dress windows. I was working the display department up top, making various props. So I thought, well, I'm not really getting much window dressing experience. I asked if I could do department displays, but they said no, because the ladies in the department did their own. And so I then found a job in Jeunesse Elliott's in Bond Street, a big shoe shop that all the stars went to. And the lady that gave me a room in her house in Harpenden, she worked in there, so she put in a good word for me. So I went to dress their windows. So that was me sort of doing a whole round. You know, I was down Bond Street by the end of it. And the summer came. I'd been up there a year and a half. The summer came, and I just longed to come back to the island again. And for the summer, I did beach photography, and then I heard that Pax were looking for a window dresser.
Okay.
So I went and saw Mr. Guy, and he gave me the job again.
I mean, that Bond Street, it was... Regent Street and Bond Street were probably... Well, and that and Carnaby Street
they
round the back.
The shops, yeah.
Were the sort of premium areas,
absolutely,
weren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. I lived in the 60s in London in the best time because it was all for young people. You know, King's Road, I dressed their Fifth Avenue windows as well. So I got the 60s experience from there. But it also gave me an imagination as well. You know, I didn't have that much when I was on the island. So coming back to Pax again was a real... I definitely felt much more secure in what I was doing. You know, I was allowed to buy things if I want. If I needed props, I could look in a catalogue. And then we didn't have the trip to London eventually, but we would order them and they would come down to the island. So Miss Guy would say to me, what do you think that our autumn theme ought to be? You know, so we would then look through what was on in the catalogues, which they then started to produce. At one time you could only go up to visit. I think it was called Schwartz, I'm not sure. So that was me back on the island again. A different experience really altogether. People knew me in Pax. Some people had left.
I wonder if we... Are you okay with us doing another session another day?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Because I'm sort of conscious of, you know, that they've obviously got to get ready to open up here and that sort of stuff.
Are you all right with that?
Yeah, completely.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm probably talking so much
this
that it's taking up...
It's amazingly good. It really is.
Well, as long
it's
as there's
so
something
interesting.
That you can...
I mean, I wouldn't be suggesting coming back if it wasn't.
No.
So that idea of you having the time in London, taking a break, let's stop it there.
Okay.
And then we'll do another one... I don't know, in a couple of days or next week or whatever it is.
Okay.
And Karen, there's so much more to explore as well.
Okay.
Hey, my name is Simon Perry. I'm here for the PAX People Oral History Project. I'm in Ryde on the Isle of Wight, and we're here for a second session with Christine. Christine, can you give us your full name?
Yes, my full name is Christine Fisher Lathwell, and I'm here to speak to Simon about my time as a window dresser at PAX, or Elizabeth PAX and PAX in Culliford's.
I think where we got to last time was the point where you had just gone to London.
Mm.
And then, you were, from memory, you were saying that you were in Fifth Avenue shops up in the sort of Chelsea area, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, and in central London, where the Fifth Avenue is down Regent Street, so I worked in Regent Street. And at the bottom is Aquascutum. I worked there for a while with a boyfriend who was a window dresser. And then back up to Selfridges and Bond Street. So those were the things that I was doing in London during my time there.
And you decided that the change of circumstances, I think the display manager left, didn't he?
Mm.
And you thought, OK, I'm going to head back to the Isle of Wight now.
Yes, that... yes, I went back to the island. I'm just trying to work it out. I got the jobs in central London, so I'd done all that by the time I decided to come home again. And, yes, and that's when I came back to the island and spent the summer doing beach photography.
Right, for people on holiday doing snaps.
Never done anything like that before, but it was fun.
What put that in your head?
But there was an advertisement in the county press for a beach photographer, and it just said, no need for training, I will train. And a local photographer, Mr. Woods, he just employed people to walk along the seafront, Ryde Esplanade, right the way to Puckpool and back again, just going up and snapping people and giving them a ticket. So we'd come back to a kiosk, and then he would come down around about 12 o'clock and collect all the films and everything. And then somebody else would come on duty for the afternoon, and they would give the photographs out to the people who came back. So that was a great job. Got a fantastic suntan. Tanned on one side walking up and tanned on the other coming back.
Yeah. What do you remember the techniques he taught you?
He didn't.
Oh.
He just said...
Go and snap.
Click.
Right.
And I don't remember him complaining about my photographs. My dad was an amateur photographer and taught me a little bit about exposures and things like that. Mm. But to be honest, it didn't go in. And the camera I was given was just like an Instamatic, so I didn't have to worry about, weather and things like that. But it taught me something really interesting, which was how to frame a picture.
Right.
Which is exactly the same as display, so...
Mm. Mm. And so that was the summer, glorious tanning summer.
Yes.
So did you then return to one of the PAX shops?
I did, yes. Mr. Guy, in fact, I think he got in touch with Mum and said that some people that I'd been in to see in PAX had said that I was home and wondered if I was interested, because they were short of window dressers. Mm. And... So I came back, I think it was more on a sort of like a trial as such, but I just stayed. And then I went...
Do you know which year that was?
I'm trying to work out. I think if I left school in 64, I think that would have been about 66, I would think. I've been up there 2 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what did you notice had changed? Had anything changed at the shop in the meantime?
I think Miss Pack had opened. I still didn't check what year that was. I think it's just hard to remember. It's so long. There seemed to be a lot more work. We... Oh, hang on. That was Mr. Creasy, I think we had then, who was the display manager. He was very structured and organised. So the windows were slightly different. They had less in the way of themes, more in the way of posters that would hang at the back, because he would order posters that, or he would make up posters with Diane, the lady that did the drawings. He would get her to draw out a summer theme, and then he would get that printed at the printers. So everything was very much more structured than I'd had before. So we weren't given a free hand to do what we liked. That was quite difficult, you know, because I'd been used to sort of deciding for myself what I wanted to do. And then...
How did you adjust to that, then?
I suppose I didn't really. I didn't actually feel that I got on very well, though we didn't ever have any arguments. There was a young lad called Derek who came to do display, who I was able to teach so I could mentor him. And so it was like having a young child teaching them something, which was great fun. What I'm trying to work out is... I thought I went back up to London for about 6 months after that, which would have been the winter of 66, 67.
Okay.
And then came back. I worked for Jewish group of people who had shops in various out suburbs in London, and so I would go to Hainault, Ealing, back to Ealing, but mainly, and it was part time, so I was finding it really difficult to find the rent, some friends of mine came to stay with me in North London, and so we were able to share the rent. That was good. But it got to be summertime again. The Jewish family that I worked for sold a lot of off-the-peg clothes because that was their mainstream. I think they bought from India, a lot of things from India. But there wasn't a great deal of display because most of the window space was taken up with lots and lots of garments all placed, and it was a nightmare getting in and out because the window wasn't that particularly big. Some of the shops had bigger windows, but they really hadn't got time for me to do what I class as decent display. It was just in, out, change the window once a week. And after a while, about a year, I think I came back here in beginning of 68 and then started working again. Oh, no, I didn't. It wasn't till I then met my husband. That's right. We met at the Disco Blue. I can't remember the name of it. Okay. The Halland Hotel in Seaview had a discotheque.
Mm.
I met my husband there, Brian. He was from London. We hit it off and decided to go to Weymouth to his parents. Found a flat together. By that time, we were engaged. And then we probably had the most unexciting wedding ever. It was just his mum and dad, my mum. My dad couldn't get the time from Radio Rentals to come to my wedding on that day. And we got married and went on a 7/6 mystery tour around Weymouth. But that's beside the point. I then didn't start doing display again until I'd had my two boys and my daughter. So that would have been 1970. 9 she was born. So 1980, I once again applied for the position at PAX. Blinking fly.
And was it the same people at PAX?
Yes, everyone was still there, Mr. Moody, Mrs. Moody, Miss Guy. By then, Miss Guy had Timothy, and I can't remember when Timothy was born, but he mm-hmm. was... Mrs. Barrow had opened up PAX by then. So I don't know if I've got the dates right. Yes,
yeah.
I don't know what year that opened.
Okay.
But I know that I had my children, mm-hmm. and so I had to do part-time these windows and those windows.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Jenny and Sue Arthur, who we haven't been able to get hold of. Sue Arthur was display manager who came from Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Would be in around the 1980s, I think.
Yeah.
And Jenny Gardner worked
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny's that we met at the library, is
we
that right?
We did.
Yeah.
We met Jenny, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I do wish that she'd been able to tell you some of her funny stories, because she remembers a lot more than me. I was a bit Miss Goody Two Shoes. I didn't do anything naughty unless Jen said we could.
So you, I mean, quite a lot of time had passed between
yes.
sort of 20 years, I guess.
Yeah.
Between you, is it 20?
Well,
15.
About 15 years, yes, since I first started working
so
there.
The fashions in window displays had changed?
Oh, totally, yes. All sorts of things. Mrs. Barrow was definitely keeping up even more by buying from various places where the latest fashions were in. So people came to expect Mrs. Barrow to have the colours that were in that spring and the shapes, because all the shapes of the clothes changed completely. You know, from one moment you'd be wearing lots of things with darts in, and the next minute you'd be wearing, like, a sackcloth shape.
Right.
So they were just so different.
So the clothes had changed. As
Definitely.
You said, they'd become sort of...
Yes.
Sort of misshapen, or they were sort of just large, big shoulders, and then loose everything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, that was a little bit later, but there were periods of time when things were Mary Quant style. Lots of coats tended to be shaped like that.
Mm.
So you had...
Like a sort of cut-off triangle.
Yes.
Triangle
yes,
cut off.
Yeah, and the sleeves were a little wider. But through the 70s, they'd been very much a nod to the 70s hippie look, where everything was flowery.
Mm.
So, yes, the fashions had changed a lot, and it was so exciting when I bought my first Mary Quant alligator raincoat. It was in white PVC with black PVC trims
around
it.
Oh, wow.
I was so proud of it. Then I left it behind in the flat that I shared, and I think one of my friends probably picked it up but didn't give it back to me.
Right.
Shame. But yes, so the shapes, I mean, you'd go midi, mini, maxi for lengths, and that applied to older women as well. You know, lots of older women shortened their skirt lengths during the 60s, not to mini skirts, but just to the knee.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would turn into the 70s and it became midi length and then maxi length. So yeah, there was a lot of change in the materials used as well. I got quite a bit of experience using in shops that sold materials, because it taught me how.
The materials were different?
Yeah, so everything, for instance, I mean, I remember polyester coming in the 60s, so everything was advertised as drip dry. And then there would be gradually a mixture of poly and cotton, because a lot of people didn't like the sort of the sweating that polyester gave you. And crimpline. I remember crimpline. Awful material. My mum used to wear it.
Again, it was very hot because it was basically plastic.
Right.
Polyester is plastic. And then I think gradually there was a move to more natural materials, so you'd have a mix of polycotton, which was more suitable, I think, especially if you were very hot. And the clothes, there tended to be a lead by the teenagers in what would be in fashion. So whatever came to Miss Pack's, we would gradually find that if it was yellow and pink that were in, then the clothes from Mrs. Barrow would appear in those colours as well.
What was the delay from Miss Pack to the colours changing?
I don't know. There was a lady who bought clothes for Miss Pack as well as Miss Guy, and Mrs. Connett, and she was the manageress of Miss Pack. So she really did keep her eye. She was an older lady, but very, very with it when it comes to clothes. Mrs. Connett, yes. She was a lady in her sort of 50s and 60s, but she just knew what was in fashion, and she always dressed very fashionably. So I think probably Mrs. Barrow may have taken Mrs. Connett with her to buy clothes and then looked at what Mrs. Connett had bought. I'm not saying that Mrs. Barrow copied, it's just that it took a while for the things, the colours that youngsters were wearing, for instance if they wore bright orange and brown, it just took a while for that to trickle through into the main clothing range, unless it was of course that Mrs. Barrow had bought her things and they didn't come as quickly as Miss Pack's, because I remember Miss Pack's used to get a lot of deliveries very quickly, once a week, and I would often help, even though I was doing the window, I would often help them bring the things in, you know, to hang up. So whether it's just the style of buying, I don't know, but I would hate to hint that Pack's followed Miss Pack, but they did pick up on the trends of colours, definitely.
What do they do when the sort of punk times are around? Do they follow those fashions at all? Because that was such a sort of turning over of the tables, wasn't it?
I think I was out of it during that period of time, because when we got married, we went up to London to run the Colhern, so I wasn't window dressing during that time, but I would imagine that if Sue Arthur was there, when I came to Pack's, she tended to dress in a slightly punky way, in pink hair and various things like that. So I don't know if Mrs. Barrow would have liked that as a theme, but I'm sure they would have had it up in Miss Pack. Verushka was the name of the model that I said that was like a spider with big hair. I know they bought some much more modern models for Pack's and Elizabeth Pack, much more versatile. But I don't know if they would have got... Probably Jenny would have known, because she was there during the period of time that I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So she would know. In fact, I could always send you a message to say that she... You never know, she might agree to an interview if you need it. Whereas she can really tell you more about that period when I was having children and the kids were sort of like just beginning to go to nursery, and then I was pregnant with Laura. So up until 1979, I wasn't there. And then I had to look after them for some years. So I'm trying to remember if I went... I went to Hills of Ride, the material and department store, and then I just can't remember what date I came back to Pack's.
And how... I remember you describing the way of laying out windows before, and you were talking about the triangle and layering within the windows.
Yes.
With the change of fashions to the early 80s, did that change the way that windows were dressed, or did that same basic layout ride through
it? I think it did, because you could, without making it too absolute triangle, you could experiment by, you could maybe get a child model and put in to hold the hands of one of the grown-up models when the bridal wear went in Miss Mrs. Barrow's big dress window, the bridal wear, often there were, you know, children, children's models there from the children's window wearing little bridesmaid's dress. So you could change the depth of it, even if you brought it slightly out by putting a child there, okay, by an adult,
yeah,
and then another child the other end. But as long as it wasn't too rigid,
mm-hmm,
it was fluid, much more fluid. So that, as I say, that it needed to have depth and forward window dressing.
Mm-hmm.
You could even change it by having a large notice right in the middle of the group saying, Pack and Culliford sale starts such and such a time. You know, the type of display, I don't think, changed. But as people got better and better at it, the people that stayed there, they began to understand how it should be dressed.
Right.
But I don't think that triangular look, because it basically covers the whole window except for the area either side of the top of the window, which was where the spotlights were. So you had to be very careful about putting anything up, you know, that the spotlights would shine on,
right,
because they could cause a fire. So
yeah,
so that triangle would be, you know, apexed at the top with one model. You might put a model high on a pedestal and then have a group of them coming down. It's just always goes back to the triangle, and mm-hmm, I don't know if that's anything to do with the way the Earth was built.
Right.
I just don't know.
Well, it's just a sort of pleasing shape.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, yeah, it is, but it's always been that shape whenever I've done it. Maybe I'm boring. Maybe there should be rectangular windows.
Well, that sounds more boring than a triangle. And with the when you came back, you're saying it's the same people sort of 15 years later still working,
yes,
in the shop?
Some of the same people were still there. I think Mrs. Brown had gone from the children's department. She had a nervous breakdown, I think. And then, yeah, gradually they introduced YTS girls,
mm-hmm,
youth training scheme girls, who worked with myself and Jenny in the windows, and also they worked in the departments as well, some in the sewing departments, some in the dress department. So there were some retained staff. I know Miss Keeling and Mrs. Drawbridge, as far as I knew, were still there. And all the people in the sewing room who didn't ever seem to go home at night. Well, there were so many things to do with the amount of alterations that people did.
Had the number of shops reduced? Because I remember you saying Seaview and all over the island.
And Totland. And
had they got less by the 80s, or was it still the same number?
I don't think so, no. But I think that... But I don't remember when Elizabeth Pack opened. Because I was only part-time, I wasn't given the outlying shops to do.
Okay.
Because I always had to be finished by 3, because the children would come home from,
right,
school. So, as far as I know, I seem to remember eventually maybe the Totland shop closed, and possibly Morgan's in Cowes, Mr. Guy's shop, but I'm not sure. That's not a definite,
mm-hmm,
but I just don't seem to remember them being there.
When the Cross Street one had been was opened at that time, so that was no longer Woods and Wilkins.
No, it wasn't.
That it was then part of the empire.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
They were building an empire, really. So I'm pretty certain Shanklin was still there. I remember them talking about the delivery man having to go to Yarmouth, and Seaview was definitely still there. I think Jenny lived in Nettleston, so she used to do the Seaview windows, I think. So I think the only one that had possibly gone is Totland and maybe Morgan's a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
It was more yachting things they sold, you know, and that was Mr. Guy's interest as well. So, yeah, but I just didn't go over there anymore, so mm-hmm. I didn't get to see what happened. I'm pretty certain Miss Pack was still there. I really need to know when it opened and when it closed.
We'll dig through and find out.
Yeah.
There's someone who's done a timeline of it all, so...
I hope so, because it definitely... I'm sure Miss Pack would have brought them in a lot of money, because everybody went to Miss Pack on Saturdays. You know, they
got... Can you talk a little bit about Miss Pack, then? I remember you touching on it before...
Yes,
and saying it's a popular hangout.
Yeah, it was fun, really. The one thing we always tried to persuade Mrs. Connett to do is to have a coffee bar upstairs, but she wasn't allowed to do anything. But she did become ill, if I remember rightly. I think she had heart trouble, and we didn't see her for a while. So it could be that Miss Pack perhaps didn't have the lifeblood that it needed. Possibly that's when they decided to close it. But I thought it was still open when when Elizabeth Pack opened.
Mm-hmm.
But Miss Pack was great because I think the windows were changed every Friday, so that on Saturday the girls would come in with their wages. I can't remember whether they started selling some boys' clothes upstairs, teenage boys' clothes, and. The shop itself, I think the layout is probably still the same. It's an estate agent's just up here, opposite
the... Foxes one, is it Fox and...
No, it's opposite Foxes.
Okay.
I was going to say Freeman, Hardy and Willis, but that's a shoe shop.
Okay.
It's just opposite the turning to go round to the Newport Road.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not Francis Pittis.
Not to worry.
Anyway,
yeah.
The layout is probably still the same, but the layout had a full-length window. If you were... This is the high street. It had a full-length window along there and a window that went... that joined onto it without a dividing line that went round the corner as if it was going into the car park.
Right.
Every week I would undress all of the models, and, of course, they were all... different types. We had Verushka, who I mentioned before. Mm. We had Patty Boyd, George Harrison's girlfriend.
Ah.
You might not have heard of her, but she was a very famous model.
Mm.
And Twiggy. And there was one more, and I can't... Very tall. Was it Naomi Campbell? I think it was Naomi Campbell.
Really, that early? Right.
Yes. Ah. I'm pretty certain she was a black model.
Right.
Yeah. And they would all be taken out of the window with a wrap put round them because you weren't allowed to look in the window with a naked model.
Even in Miss Pack,
even
being
in
with
Miss
the, sort
Pack,
of the edgy
yes, it was
version.
It was the times.
Yeah.
And they were taken out because I needed to change the way they looked. So because you had Verushka doing this and what... Twiggy doing this kind
right.
of thing, that there had to be a change in the shape of the window in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Verushka might go in the slightly separate window, you know, and you'd have maybe two models, like a black and a white model. And eventually, I think they bought Adele Rootstein models, children's models, and they bought quite a lot. And so they put some of them up in... We put them up in the Miss Pack window wearing teen clothes because
okay.
we had teenagers as well as children.
Right.
Which was great because there really wasn't anywhere in Ryde except for Marder's down Union Street that sold teenage clothes. And then I think there was Colin and Johnny in Shades, which is right next to the optician... cancer research, optician, dentist, and then there's a kind of bohemian boutique down in Ryde, which belonged to Johnny and Colin.
Okay, Velvet Pig is now?
That's it, Velvet Pig. I couldn't think of the name, is it? Johnny and Colin were the first basically out gays that people knew about in Ryde. They'd lived together over the shop. And they had fantastic taste. They bought the most fabulous, outrageous things that people would love to wear. Definitely very hippie. And so you could always rely on them to have something in that line. And so thankfully, Miss Pack also sort of went into the hippie trend. And by the time I got back there, there was still quite a lot of hippie clothes around. And it really wasn't... I mean, I say I wasn't in the punk era, but I don't remember them selling punky clothes. Although they did sell ripped jeans, when I'm sure that came... When Madonna came in, ripped jeans, jackets, denim jackets with lots of rips in them and patches on them. Yeah, so they did. And as I say, the layout of it was that you walked into the shop on, as you're looking at it, on the right-hand side, and it stretched right back until I think there was a dividing wall that you could go through either side. And at the back were boutique clothes as well. And the most recent clothes were in the front, laid out on, I think I remember them as roundelay type.
Okay.
Hanging garments, so you would spin it round. And then, of course, I think we had alcoves that you had to put displays in as well. I know it was very, very busy a lot of the time, even during the week. School children would come in at lunchtime, and so I really had to get the window dressed and finished as quickly as possible, because if I didn't, they'd play around with the models and try and put their arms in, you know, get them stuck up right there. So, yes, that it was normally finished by lunchtime, and then it was back down to do a millinery window.
So with Johnny and someone's shop down there?
Johnny and Colin.
Was that predated Miss Pack?
Yes.
So do you think they maybe saw that and thought, oh, there's a trend happening here, there's an opportunity?
I think so. Mm. I think Mrs. Connett would have had her eyes open to Johnny and Colin, because they were really astute businessmen. And the casualness, because, I mean, they were really the first boutique we had in Ryde, because Miss Pack was there after them. And I don't remember any other boutique in Ryde. So I would imagine that probably Mrs. Connett used to send somebody down to look and see what John and Colin had. Because even amongst the 70s, the trends changed. Right. You know, people would go from flare jeans to caftans, you know, to all sorts of different looks, you know. There were things like string bikinis, if I remember rightly. And yes, I do think that she was influenced. Whether or not she and Mrs. Barrow bought together, I don't know. Whether they went shopping together but bought separately for different stores, because Mrs. Barrow had an awful lot to buy for. But I do know that Mrs. Connett was always up on the latest trend. So, I mean, I think most of the clothes that Pax put in the carnival would have been from Miss Pack, because it looked to me as if all the sort of things like little boucle suits with little short jackets and a tight skirt, you know, they eventually did end up down... I think Mrs. Barrow may have bought Chanel, because it was a fashion copied from Chanel. And then Aquascutum and what is it the Chavs adopted? Adopted the Burberry look, yes. There were just so many different fashions happened during those times I was there. And when I say it, I remember it as clear as day, there are lots of things I didn't remember, but
I just remember the things I found lots of fun, like the change of fashion. Could I get used to it? I remember going up to London for the day to Kensington and going to what's called Bieber Boutique.
I remember Bieber, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Barbara Hulanicki owned it, the American.
Oh, I don't remember that name. I remember Bieber.
Yes, Bieber, and yeah. It was Barbara Hulanicki.
Okay.
N-I-K-I. And I'd seen that the way that she had the clothes displayed at the time I went in there when I was in London, I'd seen that she had revolving raincoat coat stands, and all the garments would be put in their sizes down to the smallest on coat hangers on one of the hooks, and then the next hook round would have a dress that would go with that particular coat. And so I said to Mrs. Connett, I wondered if we could have that look.
Mm.
But she ummed and ahed about it because she thought that it was too much like copying Bieber. But I wanted people to know that we, you know, understood display from London.
Yeah.
But so I didn't get my coat stands. But she did have... there was something like things went onto coat. She got bigger display boards for the back of the window because it was open. The Miss Pack window was open. But she got me some display boards or solid ones that were... I can't remember how they were attached. But we would dress them in a style where they were on a bright colour coat hanger, and the clothes would be draped from that and then displayed, sort of going like this, you know. You pulled them out with... Because, thankfully, that went out. The look when I first went into display was that you got a pin, some nylon thread, and you took the hem of a skirt, fastened the nylon thread in, and pulled the skirt out as if it was being blown in the breeze.
Mm.
But after a while... after many years, that type of thing went out because it was too difficult for the ladies to get in the window without tripping over the nylon thread. And so I found a method of making the hems of the skirts stand out. I got some fairly sturdy but softish wire, and I would poke them down the hem and thread them through the coats, so the coat would be doing that as if it was being blown in the wind. The problem was when I started doing that, the hems got a slight hole in, and right. The dress got ruined, so I had to stop doing that after a while. So the whole idea of making the clothes move tended to stop. You just felt you couldn't do it anymore because it was ruining the clothes.
Mm.
I'd forgotten about that style of display. But the right, wire one was a lot easier.
The idea of the movement is interesting,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, so you could make the wire go like that at the front. And then
so it wasn't just a straight line.
That's right, so you got this sort of, not pleat, but that a curved, fluted look as it as the skirt came down. So that... It was a good idea, but it did ruin the clothes, so Mrs. Barrow, I think, told us to stop it.
Mm. But what other... I mean, that's a sort of funny story. Can you remember any other funny stories during any of your PAX times?
Only me falling down the stairs. Oh, I did... No, again, it was... It really wasn't funny, actually. I think French Franks has two side windows... the entrance, and we used to dress the side windows, and I can remember there was a big coat hook. I stood on a step that they used in the haberdashery, and the step went from under me, and I hung on by one finger, dropped down, and then bruised my coccyx, which has been with me for the rest of my life.
Right.
But everybody laughed when I did it. They didn't realise actually I'd been really quite hurt.
Mm.
They just thought it was funny. I remember Mary Phillips saying to me, just seeing you hanging on by one finger on this big hook, which eventually gave out.
Mm.
She said it was hilarious. That I Oh, I wish I could remember funny stories that we... I know Jenny said that we used to hide.
Oh, right.
If Mrs. Barrow was coming.
Where was your favourite hiding spot?
At the back of the window, because the displays weren't bang against the wall, so you'd open the door of the window and crawl in behind the display and then sit there and have a gossip. And then,
so you could be seen from the outside, but not the inside. Yeah.
Sometimes Mrs. Barrow would come round and look, peep round, because the window door would be open. Because if we left it closed, we'd suffocate and we couldn't get out. So I think she'd come on and she'd say, "You girls having your tea break?" You know, so yes, but she did have a sense of humour.
Mm.
And you'd often see that tongue-in-cheek humour, especially if... I dare I say it, if a customer was being particularly awkward or difficult, she'd come by and she'd go like that. But it was a funny look that she gave you, and you knew her
tongue in the side of the mouth.
Yes, right. And you just knew that the customer was just being awkward. Many a time seeing people trying to be zipped up in bridal gowns they really didn't fit.
Right.
And Mrs. Barrow would be absolutely certain, and you could hear her saying, because she was absolutely determined this bride would have the dress that she'd liked, and she'd say, we have a marvellous sewing room here, and they did. And within a couple of days, your dress would be just the right fit for you. So, and they did. They were wonderful. I mean, I was a bit upset. I haven't read it all, but there was... something written in the lots of people wrote, "I bought my wedding dress,"
yeah,
from PAX, and they did in the comments. I just, there's somebody there who said they thought that the staff were a bit pompous, and that upset me to read that in the book. Now, I mean, you'll probably see it when you go in, you know.
I
don't remember them being pompous at all.
I guess it depends on... We don't know what's happened in the person's life before they've written that comment, or what's happened
on
that
day. And sometimes maybe people... Because people saw PAX as the posh place.
Right.
Because most of the staff had nice, you know, soft voices, and Mrs. Barrow was very cultured, and so was the family. I think people felt that going into PAX was such a step up from what they usually did that maybe any... thing like somebody saying, "Can we help you, madam?"
Right.
They may have thought the person was being condescending, and I think that's possible. I've only seen one mark, so I thought you probably just didn't understand that that's the way. I mean, if I remember, "Are you being served?" The Grice brothers, and the way that I can't remember a name, but the lady who used to make me laugh, and John Inman.
Mrs. Slocum, yes.
And the way that John Inman spoke to customers, it wasn't quite as overly done as that. It was just a sort of very gentle way. And they would call people madam. So I think a lot of people who hadn't probably never been into PAX before but maybe wanted to buy a wedding dress would feel that they were in some kind of palace, especially when they were upstairs in... This PAX here.
The French Franks one.
Yes, the French Franks PAX, because it was a big circle and you went through a doorway into the bridal department, and it was just packed with bridal wear and bridal dresses, wear and things for the mother. And of course, a lot of people might be surprised that they had to pay a little bit extra. For that, but that was PAX. That's what Pack and Culliford's were. They sold the best quality coats and dresses and bridal wear. And so, you know, although those days a wedding probably only cost about 500 to 1,000. June Langdon, who worked with Mrs. Barrow, I'm not sure where June is now, she was very quiet and kind and made people feel at ease. And so
what did she do, run the wedding?
She basically was Mrs. Barrow's right hand girl, really.
Right.
June Langdon. She married Ray Langdon of the Langdon Builders.
Mm-hmm.
So what I must do is look up Langdon's the Builders and see if Ray is still the owner, because he and June were married for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it, when the advertisement about the saying about dressing ladies came up, there was a picture of three ladies who worked with her, and June wasn't in it. So at some point, I think after I left Pax and became... I did leave Pax, but only because Fowlers needed a display manager for DeBells and Fowlers, and I wanted to up my game because my daughter had then started junior school and the boys were starting to go to secondary. And so I went and became their display manager.
So that's Fowlers, sort
Fowlers
of three doors down?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, Fowlers, yeah.
That was the sort of the other department store.
It was the rival, really. They never quite matched Pax for quality. Mm-hmm. Pax had the quality. Fowlers was more basically materials and fairly reasonable clothing. Eventually, they picked a teenage boutique to put in there, but that wasn't until I'd been there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I lost my job because it burned down.
Right, that was 81.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And I still did DeBells, but had problems with the lady that owned it. Just personal. Personally, mm-hmm. I didn't hit it off with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left there.
What was it like then? What was the reaction to you saying, I'm off to Fowler's?
I think Mr. Guy may have gone, oh, not again. I tried so hard to explain why, but I think they understood that I was doing part-time and they couldn't offer me any more part-time, and I needed to have what I'd class as a career because the children were growing up and I needed to bring in a full week's wages rather than part-time money. So I'm hoping they understood. They always used to stop and chat to me. Mrs. Barrow would come and speak to me if I met Mum in the Coffee Bean in Elizabeth Pax. And all the girls would all say, oh, how's it going, you know. So I didn't sense there was any resentment and them leaving. And also I think Sue Arthur was there and Jenny. And Jenny had, I think, two other girls working with her. So they really didn't need me. I was just being kept on, I think, because I came in part-time, mm-hmm. you know. So, no, I don't remember any resentment. I just remember them always being kind and always chatting to me. And I remember Mrs. Elizabeth Guy, that was David Guy's mum. She was so lovely. She used to model the clothes. Very, very slim. Very, I think she had a voice that would be elocution voice. She was very well spoken and beautifully presented. And sometimes she would come and sit and have a coffee with me when Mum had gone. And I used to think, oh, that's so lovely that she would actually do that, you know.
But what, talking of the Coffee Bean, what are your memories of the Coffee Bean?
It was what are probably still there up the back stairs or up the front stairs, which I'm hoping are still there, and through the dress department into a lovely sunny area at the back of the second floor. And there was Elizabeth, an Irish lady who ran it, and almost everybody and their mother would come in there for coffee between 10 and 12 o'clock, and a lot of people would stay for lunch. And they didn't have a massive menu, but they had home-baked scones and cakes, and they would do things, salads and ploughman's lunches, quiche Lorraine, so you could have lunch there. I can't remember whether they had a lot of cooked things. I don't think they did. And it was just the place that you met your relatives. And of course, a lot of
people. Oh, it's literally everyone and their mums.
Yes, okay. Everybody and their mums.
I thought it was just a sort of phrase meaning yeah. everyone, but you know,
no,
it
but
was.
It was just so lovely. And eventually, guys started coming in with their wives, and boyfriends would come in, you know, with girlfriends. And I think eventually Fowler's opened up their coffee lounge at the top. So I think we probably lost a little bit of trade to them, but. Mm-hmm. I know for the first few years it was very, very popular, and the they employed three models, I think, to wear the clothes and then walk amongst the tables showing off their clothes. I remember my mum went to drink her tea and her hands were quite shaky, and so she went to put her cup down and it went like that. And we just prayed that the lady walking by in the clothes didn't get splashed tea on her clothes. And in the end, I had to go up and say to the lady that was modelling, I've just got to look at the back of your dress. Thankfully, it was all right. But, you know, it was taking a risk, I think, having people walking round, especially, you know, when they're eating and drinking. But
it's such a smart idea.
Yes, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Because
it's like a moving window, yeah, isn't it?
And also, you also walked through the dress department to get to the coffee bean. You could go up the stairs at the back, but most people like to feel they were Audrey Hepburn walking up the banistered stairs, yeah, you know, yeah. It was so grand. They are still there, are they?
I think they might be going, you know.
Oh, what a shame. Oh, that is such a shame. I suppose maybe if they have to maybe put a lift in or something, because I heard them saying something about
maybe
lifts.
Maybe it's connected to that.
Oh, yeah. Dear, what a shame.
Yeah.
Just made you feel so grand going up them. And it, I mean, of course, there would be a lot of places that you would need space if PAX, as it is going to become, is to become an area for lots of different people, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you would need that space.
Yeah.
It just seemed that it was just part of that building. You know, it's so very grand.
I guess that... Was that there during the Woods and Wilkins days? Or
well,
was
you
that
could
added?
Go upstairs, but I don't remember it being a grand staircase. I think they extended it.
Okay.
Because I remember it being a smaller staircase. I think I'm right on that. I don't know if you've got anybody in your group of people that might remember Woods and Wilkins better than me.
Not sure. No. Yeah, I hadn't really considered that.
Because it was such a long time ago.
And when you came back and it was then, Woods and Wilkins was then Elizabeth Pack, what was your reaction to it? I mean,
I was shocked. I didn't know it was there. Mum hadn't said to me, oh, they've opened up a new department store across the road. You know, Mum would have told me in her letters, you know, but she didn't. And I came back and there it was, Elizabeth Pack. And I was so pleased when I actually got my job back the third time, because it would mean that I could then go and use all the new models that they bought from Rootstein.
Right.
And it was great, you know. And it was a real shock to see it. It just felt so grand. I didn't actually realise that it was three stories high.
Right.
I didn't know that when Woods and Wilkins were there.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't get that impression. Am I right in thinking Woods and Wilkins went the whole length of...
I think there were some shops on the side. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. So PAX must have taken over the one that's now turned into a cafe.
Mm.
Oh, no. No, they couldn't have done, because that would still be there. No, I don't know what shop it was.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Jenny saying that there was a men's window.
Yes.
In PAX.
To the left, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there were two other windows and then a side window, if I remember rightly. Don't think we had anything at the back.
And when he walked into the Elizabeth Pack shop, what did you walk into? The stairs were ahead of you.
Yeah, that sense of grandeur.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I remember seeing in green and gold.
And was there anything, what was on the ground floor? What were they selling down there?
I think, if I remember rightly, it was coats. But it must have been coats and dresses, because unless the dresses were upstairs with the bridal.
Mm. That's good, that's good.
Okay. Oh, dear. Oh. I know the bridal was definitely upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that she may have had the brand name coats downstairs, possibly the ones that would attract, Dior and Chanel, with a range of dresses, I think. So if you went in, supposing this is the stairs, there was something on this side of the stairs.
Yeah.
And then you would go round as if you were going towards the back, which mm-hmm. I think was shoes.
Right.
At the very back. And I think that on one side there were possibly suits and coats, and on this side, dresses. But what I can't remember was whether she had the more reasonable things downstairs and the more expensive upstairs, because
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think how that would work
mm-hmm.
in terms of attracting people.
Right.
Because there might be people who came into PAX and feel a little bit intimidated and might not want to go upstairs in case they got sold a bridal dress by mistake. No, it would do Elizabeth PAX's reputation a lot of good for them to have a more reasonable range of clothes on the ground floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who would come in from Seaview who were well off would probably know that they could get Jaeger upstairs. And of course, we had Jaeger down Union Street as well, which we used to dress as well. And yes, Jaeger was still there at the time that I worked. The last time that I worked, Jaeger was still there, as mm-hmm. far as I remember. And so I think it probably would have been the less expensive downstairs, the more expensive upstairs.
Okay.
And I think I'm right on that, but I might be a good idea to check. Is there a lady called Sue? Sue, I can't remember her name, but she's in the picture with Mrs. Barrow and another lady. She's in the middle.
Okay.
She if she speaks to you, mm-hmm. or she's come to speak to you, she would know exactly the layout.
Okay, that's good. We sort of touched on where we were talking just now about the cafes and the models walking through with clothes. Did you ever go to the fashion shows? They were sort of quite grand events, weren't they?
I went to the ones that my daughter was in. I've got pictures of her as a three-year-old. She was three and four when they did a fashion show in the main building in Pack and Culliford's. And one of the window dressers was her help mate, so it was very, very tall, Julie. So Julie and Dora went along there, and yes, so I was at that fashion show. But during the other fashion shows, we had to produce a catwalk for them, and so we already had these things that had cardboard that you dropped into to make the they were like you would have a rigging for a band to play on. So they were sort of kept downstairs in the cellar, if I remember rightly. So we would put out all these squares with legs and then drop the hardboard into it.
As a raised stage?
Yes, so mm-hmm. it was a raised platform for them. We had to make some stairs. Sorry, it was wood, not hardboard. And then I think there was a matting that went over it. So we had to make all those things, and then when the fashion show was on, we would have to be at the back helping the models into their clothes. And so we rarely got the chance to look out and see how it was going. But occasionally, I can remember, nipping out quickly to the loo, going down the back stairs and sort of going up the main stairs and sort of watching as the models walked along.
This is on an upper floor then, was it?
It was on the second floor, if I remember right. When I say second...
First floor up?
The first floor up, okay. Yes.
Right.
I think it was, yes, because I think that's where the coffee bean was. Yes, and people, yeah.
And how regular were they?
I think they did them once a year, as far as I remember. Because all the other things were autumn, winter. But they used to show most of the season's new clothes by using the models to walk amongst the people.
Hmm.
And so those models would be walking around in different clothes, two or three different garments. I think it was once a year, as far as I remember. There was a regular spring fashion show, as far as I remember. In fact, I think on one of those heritage things.
Mm-hmm.
It says the spring fashion show back in Colliford. Just trying to find it. That was a page I found about Woods and Wilkins.
But yeah.
I don't know if there's any information. Sort of, yeah. You might have seen that already. Yeah. Oh, there's Pack and Culliford spring and summer fashion show.
Right.
Oh,
that's at the Oasis Ballroom Riot, it says.
Yes, yes. So they... What year is that?
66.
66. That probably would have been when I wasn't there.
Okay.
So,
mm-hmm.
By the way, that shows you Miss Pack. Mm-hmm. Not very easily.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that one, yeah.
Oh, you've seen that one, okay. I don't think I've got anything else for
Pack. Okay, not
but
to
I'm
worry.
Sure Miss Pack sale
yeah.
is there. But no, there's only one Pack in Culliford, so that's a shame.
Okay. So with the I guess one thing that would be of interest, some people may have attended the fashion show. Not many people have been behind the scenes like you were.
No, no.
So what was that like behind the scenes at the fashion
Complete
show?
Complete chaos. Complete chaos. I mean, they'd sort of be going out without... Well, it wasn't really chaos. It just you were afraid because the model had only just put her shoes on and then she'd have to climb up the steps and walk along. And that was always that fear that... If it was a slingback heel, you know, they might just topple over to one side. And no, but they always organised it very well. It's just that it became chaotic when people knew that they had several garments to get changed from. And so it looked quite messy.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it was, I suppose you'd call it, organised chaos. And, of course, Mrs. Barrow, as far as I remember, I think she used to do the speaking, and Mrs. Moody. So they may have taken turns at it. I can't remember. But I know that it was fun, and thankfully, you know, we got paid for doing that. So I think dissembling the stage was the hardest part. But no, the fashion shows were fun. I just think that it would be lovely to talk to people who went to the fashion shows from a customer point of view. And I haven't looked long enough at the remarks to see mm-hmm. whether there's anybody in mm. there.
Did they have to change outfits then? Is that where it became, you've got to get something off, get it
yes,
back on? And
yes.
Right.
And, of course, most women tended to wear a petticoat, so you wouldn't have anybody with, you know, half naked, really.
Mm.
But hairstyles had to be kept in, like bouffant hairstyles with grips in would, say, come apart. And there were rails of clothing for each model. So each model would sort of stand in amongst the rails to change. So it was very decent. It was just an unusual thing for us to see is people, because normally they would, if the lady had come in to try a dress on, she'd be behind a curtain. And Whether or not you got the right dress, that was another thing. It was important. I mean, I didn't have that job. I just was there to clear up, put something back on a hanger again, you know. I'm sure a lot of people that arranged it were tearing their hair out by the time it finished.
Yeah.
They might not agree with me, but...
How many of those did you do? Do you remember?
I think I did 2.
Okay.
As far as I remember. I actually think I might remember the one at the Oasis Ballroom. But I just can't picture it. I just remember being down there and it being quite warm.
I guess the other time that Pax went out to the public was during carnivals.
Yes.
What do you remember about the... Because the sort of carnival floats are well remembered, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. I think I was in 2 or 3. I think I remembered... we didn't have to build them. The display manager usually built them with... maybe a hired carpenter, possibly Ray Langdon. They would build them, and we didn't really get a chance to try the clothes on until the day, so you couldn't really do a dress rehearsal. So none of us that were chosen were real models. We didn't have any clue as to how you stood and what you did. And I remember being totally disappointed when I was chosen to be the lion tamer in a cage, and all the girls were wearing furs and leathers. And I thought, trust me, I get that silly hat that on safari people wear.
Oh, right, the pith hat, helmets or whatever they're called. Right.
I had that with a whip in my hand. I also remember being pleased because I was chosen to wear the raincoat, the Mary Quant raincoat, the plastic black and white one, that I bought eventually.
Okay.
And it was all Mary Quant. There was a name for her brand, Mary Quant just something. And so everybody wore Mary Quant on that particular carnival float.
Yeah. What were you modelling around? Are you saying the cage for the first one? Hey, okay.
I've got one on carnival floats. Oh, here we are. Yeah, I think you've seen that one, haven't
you? Yes, that's the Concord one.
I think
yeah.
Mr. Creasy was a... That one was just...
Oh, is that the Mary
Quant? Hay with a big
one?
Wheel.
Right.
Is that the Mary Quant? No, that's not the Mary Quant one.
They look like clothes of that era, don't they?
They do, yeah. I'll get it in a minute. It'll come out. That's the lion tamer one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on, I must... Oh, here it is. I think we started off from Pan Estate in Newport. This was Newport Carnival. That was the Mary Quant one.
Okay. Yeah, great outfits.
I can't even remember. Was it the hay one?
There is hay on that one.
Yeah, so on they must have used the...
Oh, you know what, that's the same...
I've just realised. But different same... years, I'm sure.
No, I think that's the same one, because the one on the left is her.
So maybe, yes, it's the same people, isn't it?
Yeah.
But are we all
okay.
in that one?
So maybe that's the before, and that's when you got the prize. One.
Packs go wild.
Yeah.
I think it was because we were in a different carnival, like a Newport carnival and a ride carnival. And
so you toured around the island to different towns.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that I was, as I can show, I was in it once or mm-hmm. twice mm-hmm. because of that one. Yeah. So it would have been twice.
And what was the reaction of the towns when you went round?
I think a lot of boys used to shout things, but the nice thing is that the majority of those clothes were available in Pack and Culliford's and because it furs from Packs.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also the other one where I think they were from Miss Pax. So she changed the outfits by the looks of it.
Mm-hmm.
She still had the same design, but she changed the outfits for Newport, because I'm pretty certain that was Pan Estate. But here, this was Ride Carnival.
Okay.
I'm certain it was. A lot of people would shout out things like, how much is it? You know, whatever thing you were wearing. Good God.
Lots of fun. I wonder
where all those people are.
Uh-huh.
It was. It was lots of fun.
Mm.
But then, of course, I'm a lot older and creaky now, and it's such a shame that the carnival has become so small. You know, because I know that in the department store, thank you. I noticed that they were doing things for the carnival. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, yes. That's the people who are converting the building.
Mm.
For the last 20 plus years, have been doing carnivals around the world.
Yeah, fantastic.
And I don't know if you saw the exhibition at Key Arts.
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's incredible. You could get up close to the outfits.
Is it still there?
Not anymore.
Oh,
no.
What a shame. No.
But I think they've got a video you can watch about it. It's incredible.
I must look that up, because I think it's such a shame that our Ride Carnival, which is the oldest one in the country, is just like 2 minutes of a few bands and a couple of people walking down. If only we could get it to be bigger, because I believe that was the initial idea of the carnival group that started in Elizabeth Pax. I think the original one was to get the samba bands going and just get it together a bit more. And they made lots of different heads and things for people to wear.
Mm.
But it just all seems to have died off in the last few years. So,
I guess that one thing that those carnivals have each year is a different theme each year.
Yes.
And you were, last time we were speaking, you were talking about your Walk on the Wild Side.
Oh, yes. I often wonder if she took that from my window, because that would have been the period of time when I did it. So I would say that, because I had to explain to her why I had this tree. So, and why I named it Walk on the Wild Side. So I think, and that was a popular song. I don't know if you've ever heard it, have you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And so I've only just thought of that when you said about it, because it's definitely was the theme.
Do you remember other names that you put to... So each display you gave a different name to, you?
No, not always. Sometimes they would just be in my head as... I mean, it might be to do with a jubilee or something like that. You know, then I would have things attributed to it, and pictures of the royal family. But most of the time, Diane would make something for me to... I just can't remember what I called the different windows, because in my head they're still there. For instance, Easter windows, sort of, they had little... like, for instance, Spring is Sprung, or something like that, a name like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have that many. Mostly, my displays were just part of my imagination. It just seemed very fitting when that song came into my head, Take a Walk on the Wild Side, because of the clothes.
Do you have any other particular window displays that stick in your mind of ones that you've done over the years at Pax? Related shops. I guess the difficult thing is when you're doing it in week in, week out, you're not sort of remembering stuff. It's just on the next week, I guess, isn't it?
I know. I just did so many.
Yeah.
I can't remember them. I just remember that I often had to go down to Rolf's, and sometimes I would borrow things from Rolf's to use in the displays. Rolf sold so many different things, because they had all the art stuff that you needed,
but they also had a big area that they sold big pots from India, 1960s style pots, pampas grass, woven stalls. I bought one of them when they closed. I bought a woven stall, raffia woven stall that was quite high, very 1960s. They sold an awful lot of things that were on trend, and they would lend them to me for windows, so I could have a window that was maybe Mrs. Barrow had Indian design dresses, and I could get pots that would look right with it, you know, just would have that look. Try and sort of find some material that had an Indian feel to it. But again, you had to be quite careful about what you put in as a background, because if the clothes were highly patterned, it didn't sit well. They always had to be plainish at the back. So just might be that I would choose, because Indian people use a lot of orange backgrounds and browny colour backgrounds, I might choose material that was orange silk to drape down, or just to give them, you know, a contrast with the clothes that she was selling. I just don't remember.
Well, you've remembered an awful lot throughout the... I mean, this is the second session. There's a lot has come out, so...
It has.
Is there anything that I should have asked you about, do you think, that I haven't asked you about yet?
I think I already told you that the Christmas windows were very... very, very important and very big, and we had to make all the things that went in it, dress all the trees, and but also make the little sprites and things like that. So that was when Sue Arthur was display manager. So we did spend a good part of the autumn making everything down in the cold cellar. And I think I may have already told you that. So. I can't think of anything.
Okay.
But what I could do is, if I do think of a theme that I used, because I know that I used props, and sometimes I made them, which is why I made such a lot at DeBell's, because I had props.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to do that and use a jigsaw. So you could say that the majority of the windows that stick in my mind tend to be the one that I won at Hills,
mm-hmm.
or another one that I did at Hills with some models standing in a canoe greeting a Livingston, and that was to display materials.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of any now that stand out in my mind, and I think what might make me a good idea is just to, if I think of anything, because I shall have a good think tonight, and I'll write it down, and if you think it's worth speaking to me about, then
okay, or maybe just some notes, that would be good.
Yeah, notes would be fine, yes.
Okay, brilliant. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much for your
time.
That's
all right.
Much appreciated.
I've really enjoyed it.
It's been great.
Made me feel that it's staved off dementia. Because it's made me remember things that I hadn't remembered.
It is amazing how memories link, isn't it?
Mm.
Really is.
Absolutely. I just hope that you find a few more people that can give you a better picture of how it looked in there. Because it was like going into a proper department store. And then when I came to see Elizabeth Pax, I couldn't believe how big it was. I went, when Jenny said to me, and I came back to the island, she said, oh, they've opened a new Pax across the road. I just thought it was just going to be a single shop. It didn't occur to me that they'd, you know, turn it into a huge department store. So I'm so glad we're getting it back.
Brilliant. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers.